welcome to Front and Nationwide. This is The Athletic, dedicated Blue Jackets podcast. Aaron Portine with you on a Thursday afternoon. Sunny, bright, cold Columbus, Ohio. For many, it is a playoff push for the Blue Jackets. It is not. They are in Denver getting ready to play the Avalanche on Friday. Not an easy back-to-back coming for the locals. Avalanche on Friday, Vegas on Saturday. I think Vegas probably feels like they owe one to Columbus after their last meeting. Columbus won here in town. Then it's off to Arizona and Pittsburgh, a five-game roadie late in the season. They've got another four-game roadie next month, almost wrapping up the season there. What are your thoughts? It is interesting to me how this season has felt differently than last. I think we've talked about this from the start. There's been, with the young players, there's been a level of, hope and optimism sort of prevalent where last year there wasn't always. But really, the record is not that altogether different than it was last season, or as different as many would have hoped, certainly. And we really haven't talked about the draft this year yet. Now, that's coming. There's still a month to go here. But right now, the Blue Jackets with the fourth worst record in the NHL. I think people are kind of done with draft picks, but I think that's going to change as this draft gets closer, and certainly we see where the Blue Jackets may be selecting. Lots of centers, lots of defensemen in this draft. But I think most people this year more than last are more interested, at least in the short term, with what Columbus can do to make this current group of players continue to improve and become, they hope, a bona fide NHL team. They are a long way from that. We can talk about the draft. We can talk about what you care about the rest of the season. I've been banging the drum all year against playing Boone Jenner 25 minutes a night. Nothing at all against Boone Jenner. Hard not to respect the player and the captain, the way he handles himself, the way he competes, the way he carries himself. Full marks. It's nothing to do with that. It's just watching Voronkov play 10 minutes a night while, or even Brendan Gaunce not playing much. Certainly Voronkov plans into the, or slots into the Blue Jackets' future plans more than you would think of Brendan Gaunce does. So why are we not seeing more of him? Why are we sheltering these young players still while we're playing, some would say overplaying, some of the veterans, especially a player like Boone Jenner, who has had two seasons and with what has been described previously as a chronic back injury. What are we doing? What is the purpose of the season? I think that's becoming an even bigger question now. With less than a month to go. What have you thought of the AHL guys, if anything? They haven't really, frankly, shown much to me. The opportunity hasn't necessarily been there. That's almost an extension of our previous talking point. And the Blue Jackets. I've done some work throughout the season sort of logging these. I have 13 games where the Blue Jackets have had a lead in the third period and lost, either in regulation, that's happened twice, in overtime, or in shootout, that's happened 11 times. Now, one thing I wish to dispel here is this idea, as I've heard people within the team and some in the fan base say, geez, if they had just held on to some of those games, they'd be in a wild card spot. Well, that's not entirely true. Let's just do the math real quickly if we can. So they've lost, of those 13 games, they've lost two of them without getting any points whatsoever. In other words, they've lost them in regulation. In 11 of those games, they've gotten a point. So what is reasonable? Even the best teams will lose leads in the third period throughout the season. Maybe it happens four or five times. So of those remaining 11, let's say the Blue Jackets, if we're being, I think, overly fair perhaps, maybe 6 to 9 of those games you would think they should have held on to. So that's an additional 6, 7, 8, or 9 points. that doesn't put them anywhere near a wild card. In other words, that's not what's keeping them out. Those games have been frustrating. Those games suggest a larger issue within the team, leadership. How else to say this nicely? Balls when it matters most. I will say this, and Pascal Vincent has made this point, and I think it is fair that, you know, when they lose the game to Ottawa recently, they were on March 14th, they're up 2-0 until Ottawa scores 2 in the third. That didn't strike me as the same as some of their earlier losses. The games where they just completely froze. You could just see them almost urinating down their legs in the defensive zone, waiting for something bad to happen. I didn't get that feel against Ottawa. They just lost, and those games happen sometimes. They gave up a goal at 7:25, a goal at 12:27, and they ended up losing in a shootout. Now, that's not good. You can't accept that, certainly, but that one didn't feel the same to me as some of the earlier ones. The Detroit game the other night in Detroit kind of did feel that way. They were in there. Daniil Tarasov had to make about 6 saves in the final 5 minutes of regulation just to keep them at 2-2. They end up scoring, Detroit does, with 12.6 seconds remaining. They win 48 seconds into overtime. That game kind of felt like some of the earlier games. And I will say this, we're getting to a point in the season now where there's desperation on one bench. And in Detroit, that was on the Detroit bench. They are in the fight of their lives for a playoff spot. After several years out, Detroit kind of has a shot, but they've not played well lately. They needed that game desperately. You could see that in their push. And for the Blue Jackets, it's hard to manufacture that, especially with 4 AHL guys in. That's just the reality of the situation. So we can talk about any of these things. Again, the Blue Jackets they're in Denver now, skating in Denver today. We'll play Colorado tomorrow, Vegas on Saturday. Arizona on Tuesday, then the road trip ends up in Thursday at Pittsburgh. We can take your questions via the stage. I have one in there already, Paul B. We'll get to you in a couple minutes, Paul. We also have several questions in the text queue, and you can reach us there. We're going to go for about 45 minutes. Let's start it off here. Kyle Z says, what does the fact that the team will not be hiring a firm to help aid their GM search indicate about the hiring process? Great question, Kyle. Here is the way that I've been sort of boiling it down. The due diligence that led this organization to Mike Babcock is the same due diligence that now is in pursuit of a general manager, minus Jarmo Kekalainen. This is John Davidson and Mike Priest running the process. You must allow that lessons have been learned. That's what good employees do. It's not that they don't make mistakes, it's that they learn from them. What was learned from the Babcock situation? Are they really doing due diligence? Or are they, as it was with the Babcock, basically talking to people who would tell them that Mike Babcock would be good for the job? Is it truly due diligence, or is that just corporate psychobabble that you put forward to make people feel better? John Davidson has a wealth of experience in this game. That also means he's got a huge Rolodex. For those over the age of 40, a Rolodex used to be where you kept phone numbers for people. Now it is within your phone. But does he use that experience to hire the right guy, or does he use that experience to hire somebody that he knows? It could be that somebody he knows is the right guy. We must allow for that too. As of a week and a half ago, this was not being done by a search firm. This is not being done with people who have helped other NHL franchises land the right guy for them. This is being done by John Davidson and Mike Priest. So, wish them well along the way. Jason N. says, do you think Johnny Gaudreau is traded by the new GM, or will that prove to be too difficult a task? Well, that's a big question, and I don't think your question doesn't say right away. So will Johnny Gaudreau be traded at some point by the new GM? I mean, I assume the new GM is going to stick around for a few years. I think it's possible. I don't think the new GM comes in saying Johnny's got to go. And I don't think Gaudreau is unhappy. So I don't know that that's seen as an urgent question on the list of things to do for the new GM. Can't say that it's not going to happen eventually, but I don't think that's seen as the first and foremost issue. I think they want to see what they can do to surround Gaudreau better. I want to see Fantilli with Gaudreau. I would like to see Fantilli in the middle with Gaudreau on one wing and maybe Boone Jenner on the other. Yeah. So let's see. I think there are a lot of pressing questions for the new GM. I'm not sure trading Johnny is going to be front and center. I think what to do with Patrick Laine is a bigger question. Obviously, first and foremost is Patrick's health. Does he wish to continue playing hockey? If so, where does that take place? Is it in Columbus or is it elsewhere? I think the Blue Jackets have to fix their goaltending situation. We're going to step to the stage in a moment, so be ready, Paul B. I know you are. Philip A. says, what the heck does the organization think of Nylander? Should he be considered an option for the top six in the future? Great question, Philip. You wonder, what does this mean? Is this a false read on Nylander? Honestly, I didn't like his game. I haven't really cared for his last two games, Detroit or Winnipeg. Before that, he's been really good. I mean, I think this is going to be a difficult evaluation because I do think when they acquired him, I don't want to say he was a throw-in for the trade, but it was clearly about the draft pick. The Blue Jackets made that clear. But he's done more than you could have possibly imagined. And so I certainly would not go long-term with him. I don't think his career arc suggests that is a defendable tack, but I could certainly see a one-year extension and see what he's got, see if he can back it up. The issue with him is not, has he been able to play at a high level? It's, can he sustain it? And you know what? Maybe this is the wake-up call of his career where he realizes I've got to do it here or I may not get a chance to do it again in this league. That can be motivating. It's in there. The talent is in there. We've seen it. He looks like a really interesting player. He's got some skills. But you just wonder how difficult it is to read the situation from a player evaluation standpoint. So let's step to the stage. Paul B., you are on Front and Nationwide. Go on ahead, please.
Gordy, how are you?
Good, Paul. How are you?
I'm well. Hey, you were kind of touching on it a little bit earlier in the show, but I was kind of wanted to talk. You know, I preface this with, like, the last two seasons, obviously, I think everyone will agree they've stunk last year. But, like you've said, this year's just been a little bit different. I would argue if you had the two teams go to head-to-head, this team this year would win more games than last year's team against each other. It's just a better team, and I think sure. You can preface that with, you know, the boys are learning. The kids are growing, and you've talked about that in a lot of your articles. excuse me. So I'm curious, you know, there's going to be a lot of changes. Who knows what direction the team goes, this off season. But I think you're right. This is a team that's very far from a playoff spot, maybe 2-3 years. Cause they got to take their lumps. They got to learn to figure it out and they have to learn to win the games that they have the chance to. So I'm curious, what, in your opinion, next year, assuming the team continues to progress and get better, earning more points and winning more games like they have done this year from last year, what next year would be an acceptable, in your opinion, an acceptable, I guess, ceiling for them?
Yeah. Well, I will say this. I think they did a real disservice this year by talking playoffs before the season started. And I think it would be a disservice to go there again next year. Not to sound like an old fuddy-duddy. I know this was Torts and Hitchcock used to say this. Dave King would say this as well. You know, some of these teams that throw around this idea of making the playoffs when they have no understanding of what it takes to make the playoffs. They have no real, like, who are they to even talk about making the playoffs when you had 59 points last year? Like, that's ridiculous. Look at the top eight teams in the East. Look at the top 10, 11 teams in the East this year and tell me who you're better than. Now, I know sports is great because the unexpected can happen, but I just think you have to be, of course you should aspire to do as much as you possibly can, but I just think you do yourself a disservice by really taking the actions of a rebuilding team, but still speaking like a team that's not rebuilding. And I think you just set yourself up for real disappointment that way. They have a lot to look forward to here, but they're still, and sometimes teams skip steps in their development. I mean, we've seen that through the years too. Typically it ends up biting you eventually and you go back at some point because you didn't climb the right way. But I still think the next step for this team, I don't think they should be talking playoffs next summer, next fall. And we'll see what kind of moves they make this year. Maybe there will be incredible optimism again. I just think for them, the next step is playing games this time of season that matter. So if you look at the standings now, there's a bunch of teams. It's really hard. We've said this, like, come on. They'll tell you, teams that are losing teams will tell you how hard it is to win in the National Hockey League, when in fact, somebody wins every game. Somebody wins every game. And the way that these three-point games play out, like, honestly, the Pittsburgh Penguins have a huge climb to make, but they're 9 points out with 14 games to go. That's almost impossible. But if you're the Blue Jackets, I think you should aspire to be in that realm. I think what's reasonable is to be at this point next year playing games that matter, not as a spoiler, but as a team that's got a shot. The Islanders are at 73 points. They're 3 points out of a wild card with 14 games to go. Not looking great, especially because of their regulation wins. They have only 21, but they've got a shot. Now, that's disappointing for them because they didn't do much in the offseason and they thought they were a playoff team. But if you're the Blue Jackets, sort of climbing into that, you know, with 5 games to go, you're still alive sort of situation. And that's not hard to do in the NHL because so many teams, half the league makes the playoffs. So giving yourself a shot, playing games that matter. Listen, this team has not handled even single games well that really weigh nothing in the grand scheme of things. They've not handled those games well. They now, the next step is to learn how to handle big games well. Okay, you win this game, you're 3 points out of the playoffs with 10 to go. How will you handle that? So to me, that's the next step for them. And depending upon what moves are made this summer, you know, there could be a new coach next year. There could be a new goaltender. They could have a new look up front if they make some trades. Very curious to see what the new GM thinks is the best approach. But when you go from 59 points right now, let's see, what do they have? They have 58 points. So they're going to surpass last year's win total with their next win, or last year's point total with their next win. So progress, but progress is most often incremental in this league. And they're going to go way past last year's point total if they just even stay on the same pace. They'll probably approach 70, but they're still going to miss the playoffs by 20 plus points. So that is a huge gap to fill. And, you know, I think what's reasonable. It's easier to sell "Come grow with us" to a fan base than it is to say we think we're a playoff team, and then you're out of it again in November. Let's go back to the text questions. Barrick N says, how do GM candidate interviews in the NHL work? Are the CBJ able to interview people employed by teams when those teams are eliminated from the playoffs, or do they have to wait for the season to be completely over? So, Barrick, each situation is a little bit different. Certainly, there are candidates who wish to be considered who right now are not currently working in the NHL. And those, they can be interviewed right now. So those are the ones you would do early. That's why whenever it leaks here that so-and-so interviewed for a job, people need to be very careful about what that means. Just because somebody goes first does not necessarily mean that they're the lead candidate. There are other situations where an assistant GM at this time of season could be allowed to step out on the down low and do an interview. Or their team may say, we're not doing any of that till the playoffs are over. So this is why, even from the start, I think we said that this is a job that this is going to go into the off season. And if they hired somebody before the off season, I think that would be an alarm bell, frankly, because that means they didn't talk with everybody that they could have. So each team will handle it a little bit differently. Some would say, I can't do anything. I know some people who are probably considered candidates who have not reached out for the team, whose feeling is, listen, I think I'm a candidate. I think I would like to be a candidate, but I'd rather have them call me and let me know that they think I'm a candidate too. So there's some people who have reached out asking for an interview, some people begging for an interview, and other people are kind of waiting on a phone call, and that will most likely come when their season is over. Scott M. says, what are you most hopeful for in this organization? If it's in terms of the Blue Jackets at any point being a winning franchise, I think it's got to start with Fantilli, Sillinger, Chinnikov, the young guys. I think that's really the approach that this team should take. I think those guys should be up in billboards, honestly. I think they should be promoting their young talent more. I think they should be promoting their talent more. I would say that. Let's see. Andrew R. says, how are Fantilli, Johnson, and Chinnikov doing? Fantilli is, by all accounts, doing okay, fine. I think as we move along here, the idea that he is going to return in mid-March is obviously not going to happen. Could be a late March, but to my knowledge, he has not started skating yet. I'll check in on that in the next couple of days. The club has said that they're hopeful he plays again. That is different, certainly, than when the injury first happened, when they said, oh, yeah, he'll play again. Hopeful is the word now. And it's pretty clear they're not going to do anything that would be considered even remotely risky with him, because, you know, this is the crown jewel. So that leg needs to heal and needs to be 100% before it's even tested in a game setting. Johnson's doing okay. He's had surgery the first few days of post-surgery, which are, from people who have been through that surgery, say are the worst, are behind him now. Spoke with him a little bit via text. He said he's doing okay. He's getting through. Don't know much about Chinnikov. Not sure where he's at. There's all kinds of injuries with this team right now. And that's one of the reasons is it has started to feel like last year a little bit, because you're doing the MASH unit every game. But there's some update on those guys. Sorry, not Chinnikov. Not much known there. But I don't think any of the three are traveling with the team. So. Scott G says, what are your thoughts on Nylander? I know he has started hot and trailed off with previous clubs. Any idea why this has happened consistently? Has it been an effort/commitment thing? Do you get the feel that he might finally have figured it out, or will he be buried in Cleveland by this time next year? Scott, I don't know, and I'm going to reserve judgment. I think it's kind of up to Alex. as said earlier, you know, there could be a sense with him that this is his last chance or his last best chance. So you better make use of it. He certainly has to this point. Full credit to him. But I think it would be reckless to predict where this is going with him. So I kind of, with players like this, I kind of stay in the here and now. Because if this is his history, then, you know, there's every reason to believe he's going to tail off again or get comfortable again. But, you know, it's up to him. It's up to him. Let's all watch together and see where he goes. Patrick R. says, how many names out there would be an absolute home run hire? Patrick, I'm not sure what you mean, if that's GM or coach. I'll go with GM because that's the one they're looking for. I mean, it depends on what they're looking for. I love this opportunity because there's so many candidates available. I feel like there's so many bright potential GMs coming. I just think it's a matter of how you want to do this, which direction you want to go. Do you want a veteran GM who has done this for years? If you're that guy, Ken Holland could be out there. I'm not saying he's the home run. I'm not saying he should be the guy. I'm saying if you want a veteran, there's your veteran. Several guys that used to be GMs that are no longer GMs. Gillis, Jeff Gorton. Not sure he would leave Montreal, his position with the Canadiens. But if he desires to be back in the GM's chair, which many people find a thrill, then maybe he could be available. There's lots of young up-and-comers. Mark Hunter is a very interesting candidate if he chooses to be. I keep hearing he is likely to go into Edmonton if Holland leaves. But Mark Hunter, interesting guy. Look at the success that Vegas has had with McCrimmon. And tell me that a junior coach can't just step right in and do it. Hunter is a strong personality, has a hell of an operation in London. Certainly the junior leagues are different than the NHL. But a lot of people think he is a proven winner. There's some young up-and-coming guys. There are people who have a connection to the organization. Chris McFarland is currently the GM in Colorado. He's helped build a monster of a team there. He couldn't leave there to come back to Columbus just as the GM. Certainly, they'd have to create a different title, a sweeter title. Executive vice president and general manager, something like that. Would he consider that possible? What about Matthew Darche? There's a former player, Blue Jackets organization, who was a finalist for the Pittsburgh job. Probably gets the Pittsburgh job if Toronto doesn't fire Dubas, and then Dubas goes into Pittsburgh. At some point, Matthew Darche is going to get a GM job. So there are so many candidates. I think I think there's probably several different people who they could hire who would do a really good job. I don't think it's just, I don't think it's one size or one candidate only that can do it. It's a matter of what you're looking for. But I wouldn't you love to be a little birdie on the interviews? George M says, why is there still little support for Voronkov? For Calder, George clarifies. Yeah, for Calder. You know what? The Blue Jackets are maybe this league's most anonymous team because of their history of failure and futility. It's almost as if things that happen here don't happen sometimes. Have you noticed the Remke fellow in New York? Lots of headlines. Somehow the one fight that didn't happen, people talk about all of the fights that he's had, this fight, that fight, that fight, this fight. Yeah. What about the fight where he got his ass kicked by Olivier? It's almost like it didn't even happen. And we hear, you hear that sort of stuff all of the time, where last year, I remember this time, people were talking about the number one pick. Is he going to go to the, is Connor Bedard going to go to the Blackhawks? Maybe he'll go to the Anaheim Ducks, or he could go to the San Jose Sharks. And the Blue Jackets are sort of raising their hand going, wait a minute, what about the team that's second worst? It's like sometimes they are the franchise that the rest of the world forgot. I think that's all that it is. I think there are people who are going to vote for that award, the Calder Trophy. If you said to them, where did you put Voronkov? They might, if they're being honest, say, who? Because it's just not, he just hasn't registered with a lot of people. It's totally unfair. It's what people here in Columbus fight against. I think you could make a strong argument. I think Bedard's going to win it. I think the defenseman in Minnesota is going to, Faber is his name, he's going to challenge and probably finish second. I think you can make a hell of an argument for Voronkov for third. Now, what some people will steer away from is his age. He's not 18, 19. He was a pro in Russia for a couple of years before he came over. I think with the way that he's played, with the ice time he's had, and read that to mean not much, he's really been, and with the challenges that anyone would face stepping to the other side of the world to play, he's been really, really impressive. So at this point, I'm going to vote for him for the Calder, probably second or third on my ballot. He's definitely going to be on the ballot, though, at this point. I think that's the biggest reason why it just doesn't register across the league. Douglas says, not as much a question as a prompt. The NHL parity experiment is working, sort of. Tier 1, teams 1 through 8 are separated by 5 points, and Tier 3 are separated by 7 points. Tier 2, 9 to 16, are separated by 11 points, and Tier 4 has a 30-point gap between 25 and 32. I guess that my question would be, do you think that the type of grouping is good for the game long term? Douglas, I think the league, it's not a matter of me liking it because I don't really like it. I kind of like ties. I know I'm in the minority. But as a math guy, not a advanced level math guy, but as a guy who loves numbers, it does pain me that the points percentage, it must be stated as such, points percentage, not winning percentage. I was looking at this today. The Blue Jackets, since they came into the league, have the lowest points percentage of any franchise. They're 30th. Vegas and Seattle have come in after them, obviously. But their points percentage through the years, despite only 763 wins in 1,801 games, is 0.485, barely below 500. Again, that's points. That's not wins. Their winning percentage is like 42%. What this has done, however, as it has created a sense where so many teams are in the playoff hunt well into the season. Baseball's done this with their fabricated wild card. Used to mean so much more, 162-game season. Now it's just long, and it doesn't settle as much as it used to. The NHL, if you look in the East, the top 8 teams, there are 1, 2, 3, there are 4 teams within 6 points of joining the top 8. So 12 teams in the East still realistically have a chance. In the West, 79 points is the last wild card team, Vegas, and you've got 1, 2, 3 teams within 8 points of that. And a fourth team, Seattle, 11 points out with 15 to go. That's not going to happen. But so there's 11 in the West, and there are 12. So 25 of the teams in this league still at this date, with 1 month left in the season, feel like they've got a shot. That's what the league wanted. That's what the league wanted. Now, you know, it's up to some of us to continually point out that the team that makes the playoffs as the eighth seed is not a great team sometimes. But we also saw what happened last year when Florida got in. Hockey is fluky. Is it a possibility that Boone wants slash relishes those high playing minutes? Karen, that's a great point. Of course he does. Yes. He'll take more, thank you. He will always take more. He's not going to say, I need a blow here, coach, send somebody else over the boards. That is not why. That's not how Boone Jenner is wired. That's why people love Boone Jenner. That's why he is who he is. But it still is the coach's job. I mean, listen, I hope this never reaches the point where Boone has another back injury. But if he does, Pascal Vincent should face a heap of shit. Because this, I forget what he played the other night. Let me look here. It was outrageous. Outrageous in a game that barely went into overtime. It went less than a minute into overtime. And let me see what he played. It was something. He played 23:54 and was minus three. Whew. Against 15 of 23 faceoffs. That's what it is, right? He went 15 of 23. The rest of the team went 9 of 31 in faceoffs. They miss Corrali. Still, Voronkov was 4 of 5 on faceoffs, played 10 minutes and 11 seconds. 10 minutes and 11 seconds. Where's Gonce? Gonce played 12:46. Voronkov played less than Brendan Gonce. The only player who played less than Voronkov, only two players, were Puthia and Trey Fix-Milanski. For a guy that has 17 goals this year. Three shots, two hits. It's not like he wasn't playing. Won 4 out of 5 faceoffs, 10 minutes, 11 seconds. But yeah, Boone wants more. Boone always wants more. Chris B. Hey, Aaron, hope you're doing well. Thank you, Chris. Do you think the new GM will make sweeping changes to the coaching staff, or will he, she let it ride for a season or at least until contracts expire? Chris, the honest answer is I don't know. It depends on who that person is and who they have. They may come in thinking that they've got a person that they've always wanted to hire as coach, and that person is available. I would assume that sort of latitude would be allowed. So, yeah, until they make a hire and until that person starts to weigh in, I don't think we're going to know how they feel. So, you know, it is so many things depend upon where that goes. Anyways, hearing that Werenski may be a game time decision for Friday. And if that's the case, they'll need a defenseman from Cleveland. So maybe we do see Juracek in Columbus after all. So keep an eye on that. They're skating today. I'm not sure if Werenski's going to go or not. My guess is he doesn't skate today. But they'll find out about if he's available for Friday's game, in which case Juracek could go right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Christopher A. says, do you think ownership will go for a buyout of Merzlikins in the offseason? Chris, I think so. If I had to bet, I think that's where it would go. That's my guess. And I say that I've looked at the market a little bit. The free agent goaltending market is going to be absolutely flooded this summer. Where's my list of names? I made a list of these names. Now, they don't all blow you away. Some of them rather depress you, if I'm being honest. Potential UFAs this offseason. I'm going to go team by team. Ilya Samsonov, Martin Jones, Casey DeSmith, Cam Talbot, David Riddick, Marc-Andre Fleury, not coming here, Alex Nedeljkovic, Kaapo Kähkönen, Calvin Picard, Anthony Stolar, Scott Wedgwood, Felix Sandstrom, Laurent Brossois, Spencer Martin, remember him? James Reimer, Kevin Lankinen, Eric Comrie. Others who could be available, Ullmark, Jack Campbell, Dan Vladar, or Markstrom. There's going to be a ton of goalie movement this summer. What does that mean? I would think with all of these people available that the goalie market is going to be a buyer's market, not a seller's market. In other words, Elvis Merzlikins' $5.4 million contract for the next three seasons will be no easier to move this offseason than it was at the trade deadline. And so if they make a decision to move on, that may be the only way that they have to go, a buyout. It's not desirable. It would be him on the hook for the next 6 years. I think it's more desirable than him still being here next season as your starting option. I think to many it is seen as more desirable as him being your starting option next season. So if I were betting, it's certainly not decided yet. At least I don't know that. But if I were betting, I would think that is probably where this is going. Okay, we're going to go rapid fire here over the last few minutes. Hopefully get to everything here. Technical question. The Athletic recently rated non-draftee prospects. What makes a player draft eligible versus a free agent able to sign? So, George, it's age. You are eligible to be drafted when you're 18, when you're 19, and in some cases when you're 20. If you're drafted at 18 and you're not signed, and you're playing junior hockey, you go back in after 2 years, you can be drafted again. So look at Max McHugh, who the Blue Jackets just signed. He was drafted by San Jose in 2021, I believe, yes, and was not signed by the Sharks, so eligible to be drafted again this summer. He was not drafted. Now he's a free agent, able to be signed. So I hope that helps. There's more to it. The CBA, if you have a legal mind, is online and available if you wish to read it. There are several things. A college player. So the Blue Jackets have a couple of college players that fit into this. Guillaume Richard at Providence and Adam Hreschik at Boston Forward, I believe. Boston College, I believe. If those guys are just completing their junior years, excuse me, if they go back for their senior year, they can still sign with the Blue Jackets, yes, or they can wait until August of next summer, not this coming, but next, after their senior year, and they can declare themselves free agents and sign with anybody. Mike Riley did this. If you remember, the Blue Jackets drafted him, and he waited 4 years at Minnesota and ended up signing with, I believe, the Wild, whom his dad was a minority owner of. So you can earn your free agency that way, 4 years in college, or you can be exposed to two drafts, as some players have been. It's not unusual for players to be drafted and not signed and go back into the draft. The Blue Jackets have done that several times as well. Austin H says, who do you have going all the way in your March Madness bracket? Austin, I do not have a March Madness bracket. Sorry to say that. Matt S. says, regarding the article you released this past Sunday game against the Sharks, you mentioned Johnny's comment about Tarasov being a great teammate and loving having him in net. Was this a potential shot at Elvis, or were some of us reading into the comment too heavily? Additionally, how would you go about the goalie rotation between Tarasov and Elvis? You want to see what you have in Tarasov, but if Elvis gets going, you'd want to play him more, showcase his play, and potentially ship him out this summer. All right, Matt, there's a lot there. I'll get to as much as possible. Yes, I did read into Johnny's comments. I don't think they were made unwittingly. I think he knew exactly what he was saying, and I think he said it in a way that he meant to say it. As for the goalie rotation, I would go heavy Tarasov. I think you're seeing this already. You go Tarasov, and Elvis is getting the second game in back-to-backs. That is an indication of where this is probably going to go the rest of the way. If Pascal Vincent had said, now we got to look at Tarasov, everybody would nod and go, yeah, makes sense. When he did it back in November, it was a, wait a minute, that's not how you're running this season at all with literally anybody else. And that was a red flag that there was something else going on. And of course, we know now that there was. I would go heavy Tarasov. This idea that people are somewhat unsure about Elvis Merzlikins, I think, is not really what's at play here. I think people know that he's an extremely talented player, but I think they also know of the other stuff. And this team has basically said it. He has a long way to go. He'll be 30 in April. In understanding what it is to be a franchise goaltender, what it is to be a gamer, a leader, a foundational piece of the team, that has not occurred here. And I think people recognize that around the league. If he were, I have said, I mean, I was wrong on this. I thought Elvis Merzlikins was going to have an incredible NHL career. He may still. The talent is undeniable, but there's something there that keeps him from getting it like other franchise veteran goalies have, quote, gotten it. Those are supposed to be the first guys that you line up behind when you go into a big game. And I just, Elvis has not mastered that aspect of being a veteran goaltender. And that's disappointing to many. There were stories, moving on to Scott T, there were stories from many years back about the CBJ front office making candidates having to take personality tests and candidates thinking it was bizarre and more for an office job than an NHL job. Assuming that no longer occurs. Yeah, so years ago, this was when they were looking for a coach to replace, I think it was Hitch, and they interviewed Guy Boucher, who told them, who interviewed very well, and they offered him the job, offered Guy Boucher the job, but he took it with the Tampa Bay Lightning. They spoke to Kevin Dineen, and there was a personality test in there with some, you know, strange scenarios. How would you handle this scenario? And let's just say that some of the candidates handled these bizarre sort of office corporate geekiness shit differently than others. One of them saying, I'm an NHL coach. You know my resume. You know what I'm about. If you want to hire me, hire me. But I'm not going to walk through these wild scenarios and have you judge me based on my answers to these wild scenarios. So you, some would look at that as not being a team player, whatever. It did weed out people, probably some really good people. I'm not sure if those tactics are still used by the front office, excuse me, but possible. Troy S. says, Nylander had a serious injury and it's been a long road back for him. It's not fair to label his past just an effort performance issue. No, Troy, that's fine. That's fair, and we've written that. He had a knee injury after the 2019-20 season, which was a pretty good season with Chicago. But before and after that, he did have a reputation for, in some games, looking really impressive and disappearing in others. Honestly, the rap sheet on him was strikingly similar to the rap sheet on Bemström. Bemström has had hot stretches before. And so, you know, again, he gets every chance to get past this with Columbus. He's had every chance to do that. My God, the minutes he's playing. What did he play the other night? 19 minutes the other night. Nylander. The only player who played more was, of course, Boone, because, you know, Gaudreau had 20-48. And that's it. That is it. I mean, he has gotten top-line minutes. So here's your opportunity. Go get it. Ryan C., more of a comment. I was actually happy to see Johnny get a little pissed the other night. I think that's what you meant by the six asterisk. After the two non-calls in overtime. Sometimes he seems quiet to the point of coming off as not caring. But maybe he's the guy that cares a lot, but just doesn't always show it. Ryan, I have a one-word answer for you. Amen. Amen. Andrew K., I remember the first year under Larson. In 21-22, the team felt infused with youth after a big summer moving on from Seth, Torts, etc. And they played meaningful games in March, even with a dreadful defense. Last year, even before the injuries, they were dreadful. And this year, not much better. Did the fall off after 21-22 happen due to increased expectations? It may have, Andrew. It did. I also think that they suffered ultimately from a complete void of leadership in the room. You just can't rip that many leaders out of the room and expect the competitive spirit to remain the same. Johnny H., shifting gears away from CBJ for a second. What's going on with Cam Atkinson's frequent scratches? Is he slumping, hurt, or something else going on? You know what? I don't know. I've not talked to Cam. Cam's not a young man anymore. And I think there is an effort afoot in Philly to keep cranking up the standard there. And sometimes Tortorella makes an example out of the veterans. Liquid Bottle L says, Portsy, how detrimental is the recent news of Jordan Demay and his new situation going to be with the career in the Blue Jackets? You know what? I don't think it's going to be – really, that's up to Jordan. But for those wondering what that means, he was pulled over and cited with charges of DUI in Halifax, Nova Scotia, where he plays junior hockey. Obviously, that's not a great thing, especially in these days with Uber. My God, get a ride. I think the players in most junior cities have all sorts of infrastructure around them to get them home in certain situations. So not a good decision at all by Jordan Demay. But I also don't think it's the end of him by any stretch. He can be a good citizen from here on out, and that will barely be a blip on the radar. And when people look at his career, Daniel P. Portsy, could you see a Campbell for Elvis swap a la the Horton for Clarkson swap? Well, Horton for Clarkson made sense for the Blue Jackets because Clarkson was insured and Horton, incredibly, was not. So that allowed them to save millions of dollars. Campbell for Elvis does not have any of those ramifications. It's just a tough situation for a tough situation. Now, I think Campbell may have one fewer year than Elvis, so this could be more attractive to Columbus than it would be to Edmonton, but that seems unlikely to me. I think both teams are just looking to move on. Douglas NB, maybe Pascal thinks that if Jenner never sits on the bench for more than 2 minutes at a stretch, his back won't have enough time to go into spasms. Hey, you never know. Bryce P., wow, those minute distributions are astounding. What is Vincent doing? That's a fair question, Bryce. Chad T., hope you're doing well. My question is about McConnell. Is he planning on having a sit-down interview about about how the season has gone and what his expectations are for the team going forward? I feel as a Jackets fan that he owes the fan base to at least speak publicly about this. Chad, we have tried. We have tried again. And we will try again to see if that is a possibility. I would say do not hold your breath. Scott G. says, how has Yurchek been doing in Cleveland? I checked a few weeks ago. And he was minus a bunch. He is minus a bunch. Sometimes you can read into that number too much, but he was astounding for the number of games that he's played. Listen, that's the end of the ice that is the concern for him. That's the stuff they want him to work on. And I'll say it again. We've said it a bunch of times. I have no issue with Yurchek being in the American Hockey League. If that's where he belongs, and there's a good argument that that is where he belongs, then that's where he should play. And the team should apologize to nobody for that. The only issue I've had is to start him in Columbus for 37 games or whatever he played in Columbus. When did you arrive at the point where you just decided he should be in the AHL after he played a half season in the NHL? Like, that seems really backward. And further, don't tell a player to get a place in the early part of a season in the NHL. That is an indication that you are with us. You are one of the team members. You are a member of the NHL team. And then 4 days later, even if it's for a game, sending him to Cleveland. Like, it just, please make it make sense. If he were sent to AHL at the start of the season and they told him and his agent, listen, I know you don't want to be here. I know you're pissed off, but here's what you need to work on. And when you work on that, you will be here. You will be up. His game is not perfect. His game is in some ways limited right now. I think you could also make the argument that what he needs to learn may be difficult to learn at the AHL level. That it may only be able to be learned at the NHL level when you're truly, if it's gap control, your gap control is not going to be challenged at the AHL level like it is in the NHL. So in some ways, I feel like they've done the right thing by letting him go there and just play as long as he's working on the things they want him to work on. But the other part of me can't escape this feeling that in this lost season, that really has not had much meaning, that this could be a wonderful time to get people experience in the National Hockey League, experience and struggles at what they need to do better, a front row seat to that. Just for me, and I've seen it too many times with this organization through the years, just the seasons spent in vain. And I'm not saying that's what this is, because ultimately this could be good for him. But that's the concern to me, that yes, he could be at the NHL right now, playing heavy minutes, and learning, as long as he's not getting overly exposed by it. But you know, to have him up here for half the season and then suddenly decide he's not able to be here, I just don't think, I don't know, that to me that raises a lot of questions about the decision making here. All right, thanks so much for the questions. Thanks so much for stepping to the stage and posing questions you wanted to have asked. Appreciate you all, and we'll be back again next week. Always look forward to these. Good conversation. We went a little longer than we anticipated, don't we always? Enjoy the games. Talk to you on the other side.